Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host, and I'd like to ask you, do you have supersensible perception? Are you using it? Maybe. Maybe you could use more of it. So there's a wonderful book I've read called Developing Supersensible Perception. So here's a great opportunity for all of us. It's a wonderful book. I really love it. And I'm so happy to interview the author, Shelley Renee Joy. Shelley, welcome to Energy Stew.
Well, I'm really happy to be here.
It's so great to read this book and understand what supersensible perception is, because this is about the deepest understanding of our consciousness as we can get to. It's understanding how consciousness works and using it much more to our potential. How does that sound?
I think that's pretty much the goal. You have to sort of believe in evolution to realize that consciousness is also evolving. And there have been many cultures that have found ways to accelerate that evolution. And unfortunately, I think our current culture is a little bit stuck in the material world. So I'd like to get into some of that.
Well, we're in the material world, and we can't help it. Sometimes we'd like to get out of it, but it really is about how do we live with the material world in, let's call it a higher sense of dimensionality that we can permeate.
Right. Well, what I've done is I started out in science, actually. I studied physics the first year of college, and then I shifted into mathematics. I was definitely a nerd, and I was into science fiction and science, and you know, kind of wanted to work for NASA and everything when I got out and got a PhD. But my third year, I shifted to electrical engineering because I had been a ham radio operator as a 14-year-old, and I loved, it was a thrill to communicate with people over invisible waves. I mean, it was like the height of science fiction to, use radio waves to communicate with people. But this was before the internet, so right now it's kind of easy to communicate with people, at least through the keyboard and maybe Skype. But so I was in electrical engineering, and I really liked what I was studying, but I married early. I married an artist who was a painter, and so all our friends were in the art department. And what happened just before my senior year, I found myself on a beach in California, and taking LSD for the first time. And I don't think many engineers actually do that even now. But wow, that changed the course of my life, really. And at the time I was, the semester prior to that, we were supposed to figure out what we wanted to focus on for the rest of our science career. You know, do you want to do laser communication engineering, which I kind of liked, or, computer design, things like that. So we were supposed to find a field of study that we wanted to pursue, and I hadn't quite figured out what I wanted to do yet. But that night on the beach, suddenly the reality of the experience was so intense. I mean, it was like entering an ocean of consciousness, an ocean that was previously invisible, but suddenly I was in this vast ocean of beings. They weren't whales, but they were like amazing energy entities that were some of them trying to communicate with me and some of them ignoring me. And very hard to put in words. I put some of it in words in my book. But after that experience, the next day I realized, well, that's what I want to do research on. I mean, this is where science has got to be going, is studying this world, this ocean, this whole realm of consciousness. I had never even considered the word consciousness as meaning very much. Well, unfortunately, I couldn't find, when I went back to school, any departments, except for maybe psychology a little bit. But all the sciences, even psychology, was pretty much examining the external world, not the internal world. So I graduated from electrical engineering and went to New York, and with my artist in tow. And actually, I was towed there because it was the art scene at the time. And I started getting in touch with people who were teaching yoga and consciousness in different from different cultural perspectives. And I realized that here was a really untapped area of research, that science should really look at the writings and the accounts of mystics and saints who have explored the inner worlds. It's just as important to get the data from all those decades of writing and all those books. And I had never even thought there were books like that. I mean, I was brought up as a Catholic, Roman Catholic, and went to Catholic school for 1 year even. And the nuns never taught us about mysticism or meditation or anything. You know, prayer was just reciting some words, you know, trying to do it with feeling. And the rest of the teaching was like church history and things like that. So actually that was the beginning of my career of really focusing on consciousness and mysticism. And many years later, I entered a PhD program at the California Institute of Integral Studies, which stresses trying to combine things like science and psychology and mysticism. It's one of the very few schools that does that. It allows you to work on your graduate program in a cross-discipline and interdisciplinary way. And so I entered the program of consciousness, philosophy, and cosmology. And it was kind of the icing on the cake of like 30 years of studying mystical writings of, you know, Teilhard de Chardin and Sri Aurobindo and Carl Jung and anything I could find that had to do with consciousness. But at the same time, during that whole period, over 30 years, I've been practicing, because the most important thing, it seems to me, is not just examining something from an external viewpoint, but is actually trying to experience it, you know. I mean, you can hear stories about someone climbing a mountain, but it's not quite the same as when you climb a mountain yourself. And I live near a mountain, Mount Lassen, in far northwest, northeast California. I actually climbed it a couple of times with my son, and it's quite a feeling, you know, to experience when you get up there. It's not like seeing pictures or reading. So to me, it's really important to have an understanding of mysticism from an experiential viewpoint, but also grounded in science. And so I tried to put all this in my book. The first half is mostly about Rudolf Steiner's teachings on supersensible perception. That was a term that he came up with.
And he did a lot of LSD too.
Well, he actually took, I'm pretty sure this is controversial, because our culture for the past 100 years has pretty much been down on drugs, you know. Just say no and don't do drugs. But actually, drugs, if you approach them as entheogens, the word entheogens is using chemicals or drugs, plant substances mostly, like ayahuasca or cannabis, using them for spiritual reasons. And sometimes I don't even like the word spiritual, because I think it has to do with just getting close to reality, exploring your inner dimensions. And certain drugs do help you with initial experiences in those realms.
And by the way, I had those experiences when I was in my early 20s.
Yeah, and a lot of people have, but unfortunately our culture is so materialistically oriented that science has become a real religion. And partly because everything that we use now, our iPhones and our high-resolution video monitors, and everything is a product of material science. And so a lot of things like even Steiner's schools, the Waldorf schools, have played down the mystical internal development of the human mind.
It's amazing, because the potential of Steiner's teachings would be so great if they could actually assist their students in developing supersensible perception.
I definitely think so. And, you know, this is really a crisis of our times, the problem with our educational system. One of the main things that Steiner put forth was that there's three ways of thinking. There's passive thinking, which probably for the first few million years, humans were passive thinkers. Children are kind of passive thinkers when they're very young. Passive thinking is like taking in information through your senses and trying to imitate it. You know, you learn to speak by listening and imitating. And passive thinking is like, in fact, a lot of our politicians now generate crowds and crowds of followers who are pretty much they're thinking passively. They're just taking in simplistic ideas and hanging on to them and thinking, this person's really great. Active thinking, this is the second kind of thinking. There's three kinds of thinking, according to Steiner: passive thinking, active thinking, and intuitive thinking. So the active thinking is what our educational system, high school and college, tries to do. And we've become very good at that. Active thinking is learning how to use your electric brain circuits to, like a laptop computer, to deal with words and concepts and logic. And so we're bombarded with words. You turn on the TV or the radio, and we're bombarded with words. That tends to push us into passive thinking. But it also, if we're highly educated, we're able to go a little beyond that and think actively. And that's where you got a lot of liberals, people who are highly educated. They think that that thinking is the ne plus ultra way of thinking. But actually, we've become dinosaurs thinking that way. We've become very materialistic thinking machines who sometimes are a little bit passive because we binge on Netflix watching things. Or we just come up with ideas to you know, new companies or new products. But the third kind of thinking is something we've really lost touch with, that Steiner stressed and that the Waldorf schools try to teach, is called intuitive thinking. And intuitive thinking, the word intuitive means inward, going inward. Intuitive comes from the word tuition, to teach. So if you're able to develop super sensible perception, Steiner said that there are higher worlds that you can, invisible worlds, we're surrounded by invisible entities, much like the ones I saw when I took LSD on the beach when I was 20, there's a danger of not being in touch with our intuitive side, because then we'll be totally unbalanced. You see, to be balanced, you have to have all three.
By the way, I call this intuitive thinking living multidimensionally.
Definitely, yeah, because, you know, space-time is actually four dimensions to get to the physics of it. Space has three dimensions, three different X, Y, Z, and time is a fourth dimension. And our whole material science is based on space-time. And so everything has to be measured in space-time and repeatedly measured, and this whole scientific paradigm is like Legos, little Lego blocks that the scientists put together and they connect them, but they're all based on the material world that we can see and measure. And so if anyone comes up and talks about mysticism or consciousness, even the word consciousness, a lot of scientists these days, I think the major paradigm is that consciousness is just accidental. It kind of serendipitously grew out of
our brains.
Brain.
the brain comes first, and then consciousness comes second.
Yeah, and that's totally backwards, because everything is conscious to a certain degree. Everything has a certain frequency of consciousness.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, we're going to get deeper and deeper into this because your book is so profound. It's one of the most profound books I've ever read. And what's exciting is that, you know, it talks about this nature of consciousness that pervades everything, but on different levels. And we see it from a sense of what consciousness is self-consciousness, or our experiential understanding of consciousness. But it doesn't have to be that subjective. Consciousness is information that allows things to have form, to take form, and to create the world around us. We live in a universe of information. And then, so you think there has to be a consciousness that creates form from information.
Definitely, and that what you're saying just now coincides very much with modern quantum physics. David Bohm was a quantum physicist who worked with Carl Brimham. Carl Brimham was looking in the brain. He was a brain scientist looking for where memories are actually stored. And he did lots of experiments. He and Carl Ashley did a lot of work, even dissecting monkey brains and trying to, while they were alive, sadly, trying to find where memories were stored. And he finally decided memories are not stored in space-time. They're stored in some other dimension, which actually fits into a mathematical equation called the Fourier transform. And because he got very interested in this and holograms, he met the physicist David Bohm at a conference in Spain, and they really hit it off because they were both interested in consciousness and the mathematics of consciousness. David Bohm's basic idea is that he passed away about 15 years ago, but his idea was that the whole of the cosmos is divided into two regions, the explicate order and the implicate order. The explicate order is what we call space-time, and it's everything that we see and hear in space-time. We pretty much move through space-time, except maybe when we're dreaming at night.
And also that's where we find electromagnetic energy.
Yes, electromagnetic field is in space-time, and it is projecting reality in space-time, but it's projecting out of what David Bohm called the implicate order. The implicate order is where all information unfolds. He thinks information in space-time goes back into, kind of like gravity moving toward the center. It moves into these tiny, tiny micro black holes that he calls holospheres that are at the very center of everything. So an atom is about 10 to the minus 15th meters in diameter. We're about 10 to the 1 meters in height, maybe. But the implicate order, space stops at 10 to the minus 35 meters. That's really, really small.
And that's based on Planck,
right? That's based on the Heisenberg and the Planck constants.
Right.
It's the whole basis of our quantum mechanics that actually has resulted in iPhones and everything that we love technologically wise. But Bohm said that there's a two-way movement between the explicate order and the implicate order. And he says basically that consciousness is in the implicate order. Consciousness is in the implicate order, which is a timeless, spaceless realm. So within this implicate order, all the information that's ever generated out in outer space, space and time, our world of butterflies and zebras, all that information, our entire life, is stored in this implicate order.
Now, I'm going to create a problem here, because maybe I'm beyond understanding this, or below understanding this, and that's also saying that consciousness is derived from something. So there's an implicate order here that creates an explicate order that we actually see in the real world around us.
Yeah.
So the implicate order is the underlying vibrations, frequencies that create order of the explicate world.
Yes, and the implicate order is one. But it also, I think it's what people in certain cultures and religions call God.
Well, that's what I wanted to say, is that I don't know how to call it, but because the implicate order has all the information in it as well, and we use that information through our consciousness to know the explicate world.
Definitely. And here's kind of what it's like. We, as human beings, and animals too, and plants, we are like avatars. Most of your listeners have seen the movie Avatar.
We're God in action.
And the implicate order is filling us. That spirit is filling us and making us a little soul, a unique perspective looking out into its projected universe of all the 10,000 things. So we go around thinking that we're individually separate beings, but we're really something that's looking out and behind us, up way behind our head, kind of, if you want to think geometrically, there is something looking through us and out. And that thing is, according to some cultures, the Holy Spirit. According to Bohm, it's the implicate order looking out and projecting the electromagnetic field, which everything is sort of created by the electromagnetic field. Even it has to do with quantum mechanics and the holonomic principle that
right.
Carl Pribram wrote.
And I want to get more into that with you, because your book goes into the deepest understandings of how this works. And I'm so happy about that. And then how we can use it and how we can get there into being multidimensional, into how do we, you know, what is it that we can expand our consciousness into? Let's say, let's call it to know God better. Maybe that's another way to say it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is what this is the basic teaching of Steiner. That if I get back to the three ways of thinking, the passive thinking and active thinking, but there's an intuitive thinking that can be developed, and it can be developed to the point where supersensible perception starts to arise within a person. And
right.
The thing is, anybody can develop this capability. It's like the next evolutionary step of consciousness in the human being, I think. And so how to do this is very simple, although it takes practice and time and patience.
Well, it's really simple because it's based on concentration on an awareness of singularity. So that the simpleness is the singularity that can actually join the Fourier transform to interface between these two, explicate and implicate. And
yes.
And that's where you have chapters in the book about how this happens. It's quite profound. And I'm so excited about it because, you know, to me, you're able to help us understand the nature of life.
Well, people have to help themselves. Basically, that's it. And here's how you do it. Just because I actually had a teacher once. He was a Buddhist bishop, Bishop Shyaku, and he said, "Oh, just stop thinking. That's as simple as it. Just stop thinking.
Just be."
So, what does that mean? He actually meant stop the act of thinking that Steiner talked about. Stop thinking in words. And I used to go on hikes up to Mount Tamalpais. I used to live in the Bay Area in San Francisco. And on a weekday, I'd go up there because I didn't know there wouldn't be that many people. And I would try to walk around and say, okay, today I'm going to try to be in nature and not think in words, not try to remember anything. Just be. You know, there's a book by Baba Ram Das, Richard Alpert, called Be Here Now. So the key for Steiner is enter the silence. And many, many mystics have said very much the same thing. If you can learn to quiet your mind, your cognitive active mind, in that silence, that kenosis, in that emptiness, you'll be listening for something else. And what you will start to hear is the beginning of supersensible perceptions, which lead to what Steiner said, knowledge of the higher worlds. And if you don't activate this perception, you're actually in danger because there are all kinds of negative psychic forces out there. We're like in an ocean of consciousness, definitely a deep ocean with all kinds of, there's sharks and there's strange beings that want to, you know, eat your consciousness. So by not developing intuitive thinking, by just staying with the cognitive active thinking or passive thinking, we're actually in danger. And Steiner said it
because we're not aware. That's why, right?
We're
in danger because we don't have discernment about how our brain is functioning for us.
Definitely, and you know, this a simple way of practicing is anybody could practice. Say I go for walks, and I see a tree about 200 yards away, or you know, down the road. I will try very hard to. Okay, I'm not going to think all the way to that tree. And so I just try to walk with my mind in a state of quiet suspension so that the active mind, which is your cognitive mind, all the words that we have, you know, and we have like an inbox, you know, the inbox on someone's desk. There are all these thoughts waiting to pop up because you can only have kind of one thought at a time in linear thinking. And so, you know, did I do my taxes? Am I late for doing something? What am I having for dinner? How long have I been meditating? You know, all of these things are in your little mental inbox. But if you can just silence that part of your mind, you'll start to hear the more deeper interior intuitive part of the mind, and intuitive thinking will start. And intuitive thinking is, when it really starts working, you'll start to perceive what Teilhard de Chardin calls the noosphere, or Carl Jung called the collective unconscious, although a lot of people since actually call it the collective consciousness, because you can be swept away. Say you're in a crowd, and I don't know, for example, Trump and his crowd of people, I don't want to get into politics here, but there really is a crowd consciousness that arises.
Yeah, people, and it takes over.
People belong and they feel good because they're part of something.
Right.
And you can get swept along.
But we want to be more part of that implicate reality. But we're running out of time. And I want to talk deeper with you about what this other state means and what we can gain from it and what it has for us that is much more cogent, much more there to enhance the future of all of our humankind.
Right, in my book, I've tried to distill Steiner's teachings. He has like 700 books, I think, and lectures all printed. And he started the Waldorf schools, which try to teach people to be a little bit more creative and be in touch with their intuitive thinking. Also Patanjali was one of the greatest. His sutras from India are one of the greatest guides to working on transforming your mind, evolving your consciousness to the state of samadhi.
Samadhi, I know, and we're really out of time. And I hate to cut it short, but I want to do another show with you so that we can talk about samadhi.
Okay. Because people need this to heal. I mean, it's very healing. If you get in touch with your inner intuitive, you know, if you start to perceive inner intuitions, it will make you healthier. It will heal you. And it will heal our society, I really think.
That's
so
wonderful.
I think it's the next big thing.
All right. So let's talk more about this soon. I'm sorry to sound so short, but we can't go past our limited time. So your book is Developing Supersensible Perception. You're the author, Shelley, S-H-E-L-L-I, Renee Joy, J-O-Y-E. Is there a website or something that people can find you?
No, but if you just Google Shelley Joy, J-O-Y-E, it's Joy with a silent E on the end, you can see you'll be directed to a lot of my papers and other books and a lot of my paintings. I've also been a painter for 50 years.
Oh, great.
I actually worked with Andy Warhol many, many years ago.
Oh, cool.
In the factory. You can see images of my paintings, which are super sensible paintings.
Well, this is great. So we have to sign off now.
Shelley, okay.
It's so wonderful to talk with you. I can't wait to carry on this conversation and get into deeper places. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity, Peter. I really appreciate it.
And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening. Thank you.